1045 CT Hayward. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. President Biden is urging Republicans, especially in the House, to support a supplemental funding bill, which pairs ramped up border security with funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
It's time for Republicans in the Congress to show a little courage, to show a little spine, to make it clear to the American people that you work for them, not for anyone else.
A test vote is set for this week in the Senate, but House GOP say the bill is dead on arrival. A vote in the House expected soon whether to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. A Michigan jury has found Jennifer Crumbly, mother of high school shooter Ethan Crumbly, guilty of involuntary manslaughter. The IRS expects to collect hundreds of billions of dollars more in overdue and unpaid taxes than previously anticipated, thanks to funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. The atmospheric river that slammed California this week is blamed for nearly 400 mudslides in the L.A. area. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. State lawmakers and Governor Evers can't agree on what to do with interest earned on federal COVID-19 relief money. Wisconsin has earned more than $97 million in interest on the $3 billion it got from Washington. The co-chairs of the Joint Audit Committee say the money should go in the general fund, but Evers says that's against federal rules. A committee of lawmakers takes it up today. Policy experts say a new expansion of the federal child tax credit would curb poverty. Tim Smeeting is a retired economist at the University of Wisconsin.
You can pay heating bills that you've let go because you know that the utility won't shut you off until you get the tax refund.
A bill to revive the expanded child tax credit passed the U.S. House last week, but final adoption is not guaranteed. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. A Duluth man has been arrested in connection to a February 1st stabbing. According to the criminal complaint, 44-year-old Charles Nauer was arrested and now faces two felony charges in connection to the incident in an apartment building on the 6700 block of Redruth Street. Law enforcement authorities say Nauer and the victim were allegedly in an altercation prior to the stabbing, and his blood alcohol level at the time was 0.25. The victim was taken to the hospital for treatment and has since been released. Superior law enforcement authorities are investigating after a pickup truck crashed into a house on Monday afternoon. According to the Superior Police Department, the crash occurred around 3:30 on Highway 2 and 41st Avenue East. The truck apparently left the roadway and hit the house before rolling over. Authorities believe that the driver of the truck may have suffered a medical emergency behind the wheel, and they were transported to the hospital. Nobody else was reported injured, and the house suffered minor damage. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
The Packers making more coaching changes. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports. The Packers making moves on their defensive coaching staff after firing Joe Barry and hiring Boston College head coach Jeff Hafley. Gone are linebackers coach Kirk Olivandotti and defensive back coach Greg Williams. They have hired a new defensive line coach, Vince Ogabasi, replacing Jerry Montgomery, who had held that position since 2015. Ogabasi has connections to the 49ers and served with the Packers' new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, at Boston College. Last night at Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes asked about his father's most recent arrest in Texas over the weekend, charged with drunk driving.
It's a family matter. So I'll just keep it to the family, and that's all I really have to say at this point.
It's his father's third offense. NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks road trip winding down. They're in Phoenix against the Suns tonight. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers slipped from 6th to 11th ranked in the nation after those back-to-back losses. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy and mild with lows in the low 30s.
For tomorrow, more clouds around and warm again with highs in the upper 40s. Rain ahead for Thursday, even some thunder. Highs again in the upper 40s and breezy, turning much colder as we look towards Friday and into the weekend. It's 42 right now.
I'm Earl Ingram. It's Black History Month. I'm honored to welcome some special guests to talk about it. Professor Bob Harvey will be here this Thursday, February 8th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. We'll discuss Black history like only Professor Bob Harvey can. And you can be part of the conversation, too.
Don't miss the Earl Ingram Show with special guests throughout Black History Month here on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm not your friend.
Hello, Wisconsin. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As always, I am joined by Anya Esther and also a special guest in the booth today, Johnny Watermelon. Learning together about the radio biz and the engineering. Say hello to Anya and Johnny when you give us a call at 844-967-2789. Today is going to be a discussion of a Supreme Court case, the shadow docket, an injunction decision that came down 8 days ago, its implications for what is going on this very moment on Capitol Hill and all the good stuff in between, including Secretary Mayorkas' impeachment proceeding, which is, to put it mildly, a bunch of hoo-ha garbage. And even conservative legal commentators agree with me, so don't take my word for it. So we're going to get into all of that, but I have to share some breaking news with everybody. This just popped about 45 minutes ago and first reported by, I think it's called The Chancery, which is a news publication out of Delaware. The Delaware Chancery Court, which is Delaware's courts that handle proceedings dealing with Delaware incorporated businesses, just ruled today that Elon Musk's compensation package granted to him back in 2018 that made him the world's richest person must be undone. That the procedure was so flawed, the directors that approved it, the compensation committee that approved it, so compromised by conflicts of interest that it amounted to an illegal compensation package. The $56 billion compensation package advanced by shareholders and Tesla's board entitled Musk to stock options in the company as it hit specific performance targets. Shareholders sued Musk, alleging the process that led the package to be adopted was improper. The news was first reported by Chancery Daily. Just mentioned that. Musk issued a stern reaction on X, which he bought for $44 billion when it was known as Twitter. Never incorporate your company in the state of Delaware. By the way, that's where everybody incorporates their big companies. It's sort of like the gold standard for states of incorporation. In her opinion, Chancellor Kathleen McCormick wrote, "Judgment is entered in the plaintiff's favor," and that the plaintiffs were entitled to rescission, which is the technical legal term for undoing a thing. So rescission, or again, to rescind the pay package. In her opinion, Judge McCormick wrote that she would go boldly where no man has gone before and answer the question, does Musk actually control Tesla? That's a bit of a one-liner for you. She also wrote that the compensation approval process was deeply flawed in part because of Musk's close ties with the people representing the company, including the chair of the compensation committee and another member of the group, both of whom Musk had working relationships for over 15 years. The group that approved the comp package also included their general counsel. Their general counsel is like your top lawyer for a business, who once served as Musk's divorce attorney. I just want that to set in for a minute for everybody, because I am not a divorce attorney, and a divorce attorney should I be, I would not be corporation counsel of Milwaukee County, because those two things have nothing to do with each other. If you're a divorce practitioner, you probably shouldn't be general counsel of a multi-billion dollar corporation. So wonder why and how that guy got the job. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. The defendants proved that Musk was uniquely motivated by ambitious goals that Tesla desperately needed Musk to succeed in its next stage of development. But these facts do not justify the largest compensation plan in the history of public markets. Bow. Wow. Musk, maybe, you know, in a couple of months, not the world's richest person anymore. I wonder if that'll, you know, maybe tamp down the arrogance with which he proclaims his word, that of the Lord's, in oh so many topic areas. I don't know about you all, but I think this is just stunning. Maybe it'll take him down a peg. I mean, who approves a comp package for $56 billion? I don't, literally, unless you're turning water into wine and spinning yarn into gold, what are you doing that's worth $56 billion? Excuse me. I stumble over the B and the M because the B word's so hard to say here. I just think it defies imagination. No human being should be paid $56 billion. Nope. 844-967-2789. Some programming notes. This Thursday, really pumped because I'm going to have my friend, Greg Leon, executive chef and owner-operator of Milwaukee's James Beard thrice-nominated Amelinda restaurant. Really progressive, interesting cuisine. Super pumped to talk to Greg. He has an incredibly prestigious James Beard nomination this week, being nominated for Best Chef nationally. Not just Best Chef Midwest, but Best Chef nationally. So really excited to have Greg join us. And on Monday, I'm going to be joined by Bill Christensen, who is running for the city of Milwaukee's comptroller's race. So join us for all of that. And if you'd like to join the discussion, 844-967-2789. Don't you all worry. Johnny is helping Anya out. He's learning the ropes, but Anya's not leaving me. I wouldn't let that happen. She's my partner in crime. She checks me good, and I need it. And we all love hearing from Anya. Let's jump right into the meat and potatoes of today's show. Last week, I interviewed Joanna Fracek, a good friend of mine, an immigrant, a lawyer. We learned a little bit about her personal immigration journey, her path to naturalization as a citizen, what all that entails, how difficult it was. And I thought it only appropriate to talk a bit about this crazy shadow docket decision from the Supreme Court that dropped on January 22nd, so 8 days ago. In this case is the Department of Homeland Security versus Texas. The decision was 5-4, okay? What, pray tell, had the justices so split in their decision? The five in the majority ruled that the federal government can do its job. Should do its job, and that the federal government's job to manage our foreign affairs, to protect our border, to control immigration, naturalization, and citizenship processes, those things are the exclusive purview of the federal government. That's what the decision meant. It's incredible to me that this was a split court, 5-4, because this is standard fair supremacy clause stuff. Like, literally, these are some of the things that you learn as a first-year law student. It's crazy. Now, the specific factual context for this case was that the state of Texas had put up a whole bunch of razor wire to keep federal agents from approaching migrants that were crossing the Rio Grande and crossing into Texas. There was also razor wire that ended up, I don't want to get into the details here because they're so shocking, but because of some of the other areas where razor wire was enacted and the other barriers that the state of Texas placed, not U.S. Border Patrol, but the Texas government put in place, a woman and her two children drowned in the Rio Grande, and they drowned because federal Border Patrol agents couldn't reach them. Now, had they reached them, they would have been subject to the immigration processes. More on that in a minute. But this is pretty simple stuff. Let me read, you know, the money part of the Supremacy Clause here. Federal law shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Then there's an 80-year-old case, Hines v. Davidovitz, that states that the supremacy over the national power in the general field of foreign affairs, including power over immigration, naturalization, and deportation, is made clear by the Constitution. Reading those two things together, then, only the federal government is allowed to effectively defend our borders, define immigration policy, and detain and arrest migrants and those crossing our border. That is not and has never been the purview of state governments. This is not controversial. This should have been a 9-0 decision, but it wasn't. Now, interesting, just side note here, you may be wondering, who are the two conservatives that joined with the three liberals on the court to actually, you know, read the Constitution correctly? And those were Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Barrett. That is probably not too surprising. Roberts has shown a penchant to at least try to modulate the court, to preserve precedent, to move in an intentional, deliberate, principled way. And Amy Coney Barrett has also shown an interest in trying to protect the legitimacy of the court. Of course, Alito, Thomas, Kavanaugh, and I'm forgetting the other one because I'm so ticked off about it. Those guys not so interested in that. Not so much. Alito, Thomas, Kavanaugh. Who's the... I'm forgetting the fourth uber conservative. I'm sure it will come to me. Got a couple important messages coming up. And here's what. So the Supreme Court rules against Texas, says, no, Texas, you can't be enforcing our borders. You can't be detaining people. You can't be preventing Border Patrol from accessing the border so that they can enforce federal immigration law. I can't do any of that. Well, guess what the Texas governor did immediately thereafter? Basically issued a statement and said, fluff them. I'm going to do what I want to do here, and cited non-existent constitutional principles to try to support that argument. I'm going to tell you all about it. You're not going to want to miss this. Because, you know, apparently January is a good month for a constitutional crisis. And would it surprise you if I told you Congress isn't going to help one lick with any of this? Of course not. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're going to want to get in on this one because it's a wild ride, everybody. 844-967-2789. Give us a call or a text. You can join the melee this Tuesday afternoon. Articles, 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 that you remain unremarkable. Interviews, 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 when they say your name, I just echo. Did you have fun? I really couldn't care less, and you couldn't give them my best, but just know. I'm not your friend or anything, damn. You think that you're the man.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official.
This also is a time for rising racial pride. The black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Mayer on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join the conversation this afternoon. Can you believe what the heck is going on at the Supreme Court having to do with who has the right to enforce immigration laws and who has the right to lawfully patrol the border? Hint, hint, the Constitution says it's not the states. I can't believe that. And I can't believe the corollary disaster that's happening on Capitol Hill as we speak, which is President Biden is ready to sign a law negotiated by on a bipartisan basis in the Senate that would give Republicans nearly everything that they want, including, and Biden said this on Friday, an immediate shutdown of the United States border. And I'll get into some of the details here. But Trump said, no, please don't do this because I want a campaign on the border. So the deal that Republicans, including House Republicans, would have signed, passed, adopted, put through for signature to the president's desk last year, they won't do this year because that's bad for Trump's campaign. Meanwhile, people are drowning. And apparently four of the justices of the Supreme Court forgot about the Supremacy Clause. And here's the other thing. It took the Supreme Court 3 weeks to lift the temporary restraining order that prevented federal Border Patrol agents from reaching the U.S. border. I want you to think about that again. No matter what you think about immigration or how you think we should solve it, Texas had received a restraining order from federal courts that prevented United States Border Patrol agents from reaching our southern border. What? That is crazy town. Crazy town. It is dangerous because four of them thought, no. Let's just let Texas take over control of U.S. foreign policy, of our border patrol, of our immigration laws. That ain't the way it's supposed to work, folks. Not at all. And remember, this was one of those pseudo decisions that came down on the shadow docket. So no merits hearing, no arguments, no written briefs to the Supreme Court. The merits hearing is going to happen on February 7th. So mark your calendars, everybody. That's just around the corner. They're actually going to hear oral arguments. And here's the other thing. Not only was Texas acting, and here's a technical term for you, extrajudicially, meaning without any authority under the law, there is a decent amount of border crossers that are legitimate asylum seekers. And they have a right to have their asylum claims heard, not only just under U.S. law, but under international law. And again, we've heard arguments about fentanyl, all of these things, and we do have a crisis at the border. I'm going to talk about that today. But I just want to dispense with the fentanyl thing. Fentanyl is not being brought in by people illegally crossing the border. Fentanyl is brought in by legal U.S. citizens through your normal border crossing locations. Because if I'm a drug dealer, I'm not going to give my precious multi-million dollar stash of drugs to someone who might get stopped and arrested. I'm going to try to give it to the people that can get in legally. So just FYI, that's complete hooey. You may remember back when I did, I think about 2 or 3 days on the Supreme Court's shadow docket, I referenced work in a book by University of Texas law professor Steve Vladek. He also made some comments publicly after this crazy shadow docket decision where 4 Supreme Court justices no longer believe in the Supremacy Clause under the U.S. Constitution. Here's what Steve Vladek had to say. Whatever one thinks of current immigration policy, it ought not to be that controversial that states cannot prevent the federal government from enforcing federal law. Lest we set the stage for Democratic-led states to similarly attempt to frustrate the enforcement of federal policies by Republican presidents that they simply disagree with. That 4 justices would still have left the lower court restraining order in place will be taken rightly or wrongly as a sign that some of those long-standing principles of constitutional federalism might be at risk. So I want us all to just step back. The reason that the Supremacy Clause exists is not only that the federal government has to have a unified approach to foreign policy, not only that the federal government has to set consistent immigration policies nationwide, not only must the federal government only and exclusively be responsible for enforcing federal law. If it's simply up to every governor to decide what federal policies and laws and the manner of their enforcement that they prefer, what we have here, folks, is not a democratic republic anymore, but we have legal anarchy. And apparently 4 justices who swore an oath to the Constitution think legal anarchy at this moment in time is a good idea. Again, regardless, Democrat, Republican, independent, progressive, conservative, whatever you are, or uninterested entirely with politics in the Supreme Court, I will offer to you that this moment is existential for our democracy. When you combine this with the problems that I have outlined about the federal court's power, the Supreme Court's power grab, about how it uses the shadow docket to change our rights overnight, how there seem to be no ethical controls over the Supreme Court at all, coupled with what it's about to do to agency deference, the deference to experts that help set regulations in our democracy, all of these things are very, very frightening. Harbingers of democratic doom. This is part of a broader effort by Governor Abbott in Texas, but the entire Republican Party to make the border the only issue that matters in this upcoming election. And what I will offer to you today is that the border is indeed important, but what is much more important is how we go about solving this problem. Let's agree that we have a crisis. Let's agree that it's a problem that must be solved. When we have a crisis, I say, and I offer to you respectfully, that we must attempt to solve that problem as quickly as possible, and that no party should be excused from trying to solve the problem when a workable bipartisan compromise has been put forward simply to appease a presidential candidate. We'll dig in deep when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Your comments, thoughts, opinions, always welcome. 844-967-2789.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin lawmakers are taking steps to stop artificial intelligence from influencing this year's elections. A bill in the assembly would mean a $1,000 fine on political ads that use AI but don't disclose it.
I think it's very important that people be able to trust what they see and what they hear, and that's why we want to have a simple disclaimer on the campaign ad so people know when artificial intelligence is being used.
Representative Adam Nealon on WISN-TV's Up Front. There's only about a month left for people in Wisconsin facing foreclosure to get money from a state program. The Wisconsin Help for Homeowners program will stop taking applications after March 8th. The program offers up to $40,000 to help eligible people who are behind on bills like mortgage payments or property taxes. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The Lutzen Resort in Cook County suffered a large early morning fire just before 1 a.m. on Tuesday. According to the Cook County Sheriff's Office, crews responded to the resort near Highway 61 in Lutzen and found the main Lutzen Lodge building engulfed in flames and smoke coming from the lobby. Officials say no guests were at the resort when the fire started, and the only employee who was working escaped safely and reported the fire. Nobody was injured during the incident, and the cause of the fire is under investigation. A man involved in a fatal Rusk County crash last week is now facing a number of charges stemming from the incident. According to the Rusk County Sheriff's Office, Jorge Sanchez Zanahua has been charged with homicide by intoxicated driving, operating a vehicle while revoked, causing death, and failing to install an ignition interlock device. The criminal complaint alleges that his blood alcohol level was at .176 following the crash that killed 35-year-old Stephen Nasholm from Clayton. He is due in court on Wednesday. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jim from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people gonna say, oh, man, she's a Republican. She's a Democrat. She's whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. If you haven't seen Joni Mitchell's performance of Both Sides Now or Tracy Chapman's performance of Fast Car at Sunday night's Grammy performances, run to YouTube. Both artists crushed it, and the performances are being called some of the best ever at the Grammys by me. Comedian Shane Gillis will host Saturday Night Live on February 24th. Normally, this wouldn't be news, but Gillis was fired from the cast of the show almost as fast as he was hired for making racist, homophobic, and misogynistic jokes in the past. Gillis said previously he was not surprised by the firing and acknowledged that he broke today's rules. Apparently, enough time has gone by so he could be promoted to host. Do you think they will address the controversy in a sketch? Yeah, me neither. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 8 and 10 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy and mild with lows in the low 30s. For tomorrow, more clouds around and warm again with highs in the upper 40s. Rain ahead for Thursday, even some thunder. Highs again in the upper 40s and breezy, turning much colder as we look towards Friday and into the weekend. It's 42 right now.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You know I got it too. All I'm asking you is for a little respect when you come.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've listened at all before, you know I've got mad respect for all those public servants out there doing their jobs, mostly thanklessly, sometimes taking more flack than thanks. And certainly we've got one of those joining us as a guest here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always get the Civic Media app for free from your favorite app store and then listen wherever you are on this rock called Earth, crystal clear every day. You can also join us with one click, 844-967-2789. So much easier from the app, but we are also taking calls and texts the old fashioned way. Again, that's 844-967-2789. Let me welcome my next guest, a friend of mine, current public servant extraordinaire, and now candidate for the City of Milwaukee Comptroller's Office, Bill Christensen. Welcome, Bill, to the Maggie Dawn Show. So glad to have you this afternoon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Maggie, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on here, and I'm thrilled to get the opportunity to spread the message to everybody, and not just in the City of Milwaukee, but across the world listening to it right now.
That's right. Before we took some messages from our wonderful sponsors, I was saying to folks that while it's the, quote, chief executive officer positions that get all of the attention typically electorally, so your county executives, your mayors, your governors, and even, yes, your presidents of the United States, that in local governments, your chief financial officers, your CFOs, also known as comptrollers or controllers, depending on who you're talking to, we could have a whole entire hour devoted to how do you pronounce the word comptroller. I'm going to go with comptroller so people actually know how to spell it. But that position, at least in my humble opinion, it is just as important and yet so unknown to voters and citizens. Can you explain to people what a comptroller is and what they do for a city the size of a place like Milwaukee?
Sure thing. Well, Maggie, I am also a hard P comptroller.
All right. Great minds think alike, my friend. It is a comptroller. Tell everybody what they do.
So the short answer, we protect the city's money. The long answer is we are in charge of accounting, auditing, financial reporting. We process payroll. We issue debt. We are the city's fiscal watchdog. We're also the voice of fiscal responsibility and sound financial management on behalf of city residents. Now, the reason that it's an independently elected position is that we report directly to the residents of the city of Milwaukee and not to the mayor or to the council, which does give that degree of independence. So we are able to serve as that sort of check and balance against the mayor and the common council.
And why is the independence, why is that check and balance, especially in a local government, so essential? So explain to people like actually what it means to not be a political appointee, to have that independence, to go through an electoral process. What does that enable you to do? If you want to use a hypothetical or real example, I think it would really bring it home to folks.
Sure. I think the most real example that I can give that should be pretty relatable is the comptroller is in charge of revenue recognition in each year's budget. So what we do is we independently estimate revenues that we believe will be received by the city in the next year's budget. So the reason that you want to have an independently elected office that's doing revenue recognition is you could have, let's just say a fanciful prediction of we think this revenue is going to bring in $10 million. It's never brought in more than $6 million before. All the data says it's going to be right around six. But in order to close your budget gap, you might have, and I'm not saying this, but you might have a hypothetical administration that says, well, you know what? We think that revenue is going to come in at $10 million. That's our story and we're sticking to it.
And then they would budget around that effectively inflated revenue number.
Exactly. So then you could find yourself in a situation where you have a shortfall at the end of the year. And then you're faced with some pretty undesirable options of borrowing to cover operating costs or dipping into your fund balance to cover operating costs, neither of which are something that you want to do.
So I'm going to even layperson more friendly that, because when you spend time talking about these things, We folks that deal with these things on the public sector side of it sometimes use the lingo. So if that was a little dense for anybody out there, let me put it really simply. If an administration, meaning an elected chief executive officer like a mayor, a governor, or a county executive, has a pet project that they want to get done, and to get that done, it's going to cost some hugely unreasonable amount of money, they might use some totally unreasonable estimate of how much tax revenue they would get so that they can justify an unreasonable expenditure for a pet project, which if they were allowed to do that without an independently elected chief financial officer like a comptroller, would result in a significant deficit that taxpayers in some way, shape, or form would then be on the hook to fund, whether they're paying to borrow money. The personal equivalent of that is you put it on a credit card and then you're paying 25% interest. And so because the office that Mr. Christensen is running for is independent, they would be a check on that elected mayor, county executive, or governor to say, no, you're not going to raise $10 million in property taxes. You're only going to get $6 million. So that pet project for $9 million ain't going to happen. And it is that kind of watchdog work that you do currently in the comptroller's office and that you propose to do as the elected comptroller that's so essential for all of us, whether or not you own property. You're paying sales taxes. You're paying some kind of tax if you at all buy a good or service here in the city of Milwaukee. So tell folks what you do right now in the comptroller's office and why you're interested in running for this position, Bill.
Sure. And I'm loving the hard P on that comptroller, man.
Yeah, we got to stick with it.
So I am the deputy comptroller right now. It's a role that I've been in for about a year and a half. So I currently serve under Aicha Sawa, who is the comptroller. She brought me on, and she's been doing an excellent job. And I was sad to learn this fall that she was not going to be seeking re-election this spring. So I started taking a look at the playing field and taking a look at my credentials and my experience. So I'm a 14-year public finance professional, all with the city of Milwaukee. I am a certified public finance officer. I'm a lifelong city of Milwaukee resident. I grew up on the southwest side, the son of an MPS teacher and a Milwaukee firefighter. Currently live on the east side, and I felt like I am the best candidate to continue the kind of current financial trajectory that the city's on. I mean, the city has turned a corner, and I think it's going to take some strong, experienced financial leadership in the comptroller's office to help make sure that we continue on that positive trajectory that we've found ourselves on as a result of some recent changes. I mean, that a lot of it came with Act 12, with a sales tax, with an increase in shared revenue, with a solution to the pension problem we've been facing. So I think I'm well positioned to make sure that the city can continue on its current positive financial trajectory.
One of the things that I was curious to talk with you about, Bill, is that there's this juxtaposition. While we just lauded all of the reasons, we applaud the reasons for having an independently elected comptroller. Having an independently elected comptroller also carries risk because it subjects this critically important role, this critical check and balance that affects everyone's checkbook as a citizen and resident and taxpayer in the city of Milwaukee. This super important role. It's great because it's independent. You're not an appointee of the mayor. You can't be removed at will if the mayor doesn't like it the way one of his programs is audited or a department is audited. But the fact that it is elected subjects that critically important expert function within the city to a political process. And that bears risk. Because often the way that the political process works is it rewards great big giant personalities and people that are good at shaking the hands and kissing the babies. But we always have to be sure that people in these technical expert roles indeed do have the technical expertise to do the job, to do it independently, and to do it fearlessly. How are you preparing yourself? Because oftentimes it puts you at odds with mayors or other elected officials. How has that experience been for you, given your 14 years at the city so far? Are there examples of the independence of the office that you have stood behind in addition to your technical credentials that sort of speaks to the challenge that this office poses?
Well, I think that's a very good point about you need to sort of transform yourself into a politician in order to get into one of these roles. I've very much been throughout my career a kind of back office public finance guy. I was in the city's budget office for about 12, 13 years, and now deputy comptroller for a year and a half. And I haven't been too much in the limelight, and now I'm forcing myself to get out there. And I'm doing the shaking hands. I haven't kissed a baby yet, but I know that comes in at some point in the race. But I think the independence of the office is very important, and there's pros and cons that come with having an independently elected office. You're right. You could have somebody that gets in it for the wrong reasons, who has political motivations, who might not have their credentials, but is good at getting elected. But I think the pros outweigh the cons, and that's why it's one of the reasons that I'm running is to make sure that we've got somebody. And I'm not a guy that likes to toot my own horn, but in this case, I will. I've got the credentials, I've got the experience, and making sure that the city's finances, at least in terms of what the comptroller does, are in good hands.
Let me ask you a question. Forget that it's you running, Bill. If you were to give advice to voters and citizens when they're looking at elections for these technical roles, so the county's comptroller is up for election this year, the city's comptroller is, the city attorney is up. These are technical roles that people often don't have a great handle on. Speaking just about the comptroller's office, what are the sorts of things that you would, if you were just a voter and not a candidate, be looking at? In other words, what is your advice to voters to help them make the most informed decision possible?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I think if a candidate knocks on your door for and is saying that they're running for one of these offices, I would ask them questions that are as technical in nature as you are able to ask, because it really comes out in a 30-second soundbite. Somebody can sound pretty knowledgeable. In a 5-minute conversation, I think that's where the wheels start to fall off if they don't actually have the technical know-how, the experience. And I know that that's kind of hard to do in a citywide race like this. It's hard to knock on everybody's door. So as much as I will try to get around to everybody's door, it's probably not going to happen. But I think the things you want to look for, you want to look for a steady hand. You want to look for somebody who is who bases what they say they're going to do in reality. I mean, a little bit of homework on what the position does, and you'll know what the comptroller can and cannot do. If they say that they're going to spend more money on potholes and fix your streetlights, I mean, that's not what the comptroller does. That's not the role that they serve. The mayor and the common council set the budgets. So
I'm going to jump in here. Sorry to interrupt, Bill. You can find out more about Bill and what the comptroller does at Bill for Milwaukee. And that is Bill for MKE. So Bill for Milwaukee, Bill for MKE.com. Bill, I'd love to have you back again in just a little bit of time. We have under a minute left. I'm going to give you the last word as we go into break. Everybody, you're going to want to keep it locked. I'm going to revisit this conversation about how we engage with difficult topics when we come back. But Bill, what's your 30-second pitch to voters out there? Why Bill Christensen?
Why Bill Christensen? Well, I'm the only candidate in the race that's got municipal finance experience. We're going through a number of challenges. We've got a number of opportunities on the horizon as well. I think it's going to be important to have a steady hand as the city's next comptroller. I plan on taking steps to improve the city's bond rating, so that's less money spent on interest to bankers and investors and more money for core city services. I want to build on transparency initiatives that are already in place. And
we're going to have to leave it there, Bill. Thanks so much. I will have you back because I think this is just as important as the CEO. It's the CFO keeping an independent eye on the city's books. Thanks, Bill. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more after these important messages here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
It's Black History Month, and civic media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind. You're the key to my peace of mind. 'Cause you make me feel, you make me feel, you make me feel like a natural woman.
Maggie, you gotta unmute that microphone, my dear. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My biggest thanks to my friend and City of Milwaukee Comptroller candidate, Bill Christensen. I try to ask candidate guests to get, you know, underneath the thing that it is that they're running for, to really dig in to the meat and potatoes of what that elected official's role is and why it matters to all of us. And Tom from New Berlin on our text line saying, what a great guest like Bill to have. It's a relief that Bill is in civil service. I agree. Thank you, Bill. These are the sorts of roles that can make or break local governments. Again, not always the sexiest stuff, not always the easiest to understand. But having a truly independent chief financial officer, a truly independent financial watchdog for your local government makes all the difference. Because if it wasn't independently elected, or you get somebody who's incompetent in there, chaos can ensue. Bad things can happen for residents and taxpayers. So while it may not be the sexy stuff, this is the thing that will impact everyone's life. And for all those folks up in the northern part of the state, given that Milwaukee is the economic engine of the state, and that as goes Milwaukee, so goes the rest of the state, that election, that comptroller's election, might be the last thing on your radar, but I swear it matters to you too. And the connective tissue here between Miss Mary Wood and her AP English language and composition class in Chapin, South Carolina, and a candidate like Bill Christensen is this. Public service done right takes courage, and it takes tenacity. It takes someone who is willing to put the service element in what is good for people ahead of their own self-interest. Nobody does these jobs, for the most part, because they're hugely sexy or because somebody's going to call you up and say thanks. You do them because you have a call to serve people and to do the right thing. And when we return to what I talked about for the first portion of my show today, which you never want to miss because I always tie it all together, Miss Wood teaching AP English, despite the fact that she was reprimanded last year and told not to teach Ta-Nehisi Coates's Between the World and Me, she's teaching it again. And she's doing that because she knows that it's right to help students engage with complexity, to help us all engage with complexity, despite the fact that this woman may very well lose her job. I nearly guarantee that complaints will be made, despite all of these steps that she's undertaken to help engage and encourage the students to challenge themselves to think deeply, to think differently, and to think better. Not to tell them what to think, but how to think. We're going to go to the phone lines. If you want to get in on this discussion, 844-967-2789. How do we treat public servants that tell the truth? How do we encourage public servants to tell the truth? How do we encourage one another to deal with the difficulties of our past so that we can engage with the hope of the present? One of my favorite people and yours, Mark from Prairie du Sac, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call. That would, you know, thinking things through, you know, listening on the conversation, thinking what I was going to say, that it's amazing to me that people that they get upset about these kids feeling guilty about what's went on in this country, you know, say via slavery and via the prejudices, might not have any problem with everybody when they go to church on Sunday being told by the minister you're supposed to feel guilty about what Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden. But of course, the burden of original sin falling especially heavily upon the women, that because you're forever marked by that stain because you originally, you know, mythologically accepted, you know, that, you know, what Satan said as in his form as a snake. So I find, and maybe that's not a good example, but I mean that we've struggled with trying to edit our history and edit what was going on well into the foundation of this country, because I know prior to the Civil War, abolitionist literature was banned in the South, in the states that held slaves. You know, in fashion, you know, mutiny of slaves was a crime in some states. I mean, the fact that they don't want people to teach that history. I mean, at the Constitutional Convention, I mean, people were arguing about how bad slavery was. I mean, they were arguing about the irony of pointing out the fact that all men are created equal, except when you go to the Constitution, you actually could institute slavery by saying persons, rather than when the Confederacy was formulated its Constitution, actually probably being more honest and just saying slaves. That we have to teach that history in order to understand where we are at today, because there are people of color that still do not have full voting rights in this country.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call as ever and always. There's so much promise and potential and looming danger in the present moment. And I think our willingness to engage in the complicated conversation here on this network and with one another, you know, on bar stools at our local tavern, in our churches, at our dinner tables, these are the moments that can make a difference. My objective on this show is to engage with you, to help us all understand, to deal with the difficult information, our difficult past, so that we can again engage as neighbors, as fellow citizens, to make sense of our present moment. I just want to share a brief line from Between the World and Me. The book begins with this. Son, last Sunday, the host of a popular news show asked me what it meant to lose my body. The American dream is a perfect dream with perfect houses and nice lawns. It is Memorial Day cookouts, block associations and driveways, tree houses and the Cub Scouts. For so long, I have wanted to escape into the dream, to fold my country over my head like a blanket. But this has never been an option for me, because the dream rests on our backs, the bedding made from our bodies. It's time to...
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. The Todd Allbutt Show.
The immigration challenge in this country, as Jorge Ramos, the great author, likes to say, you can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep
coming. For all of our faults, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here, and I believe that makes us stronger.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Darren.